Christians and conspiracy theories. Now, on A View from the Bunker. This week's show is a little different in that it was a simul podcast, if you will, recorded live the night of Thursday, July 23rd, 2009, as I co-hosted the Snark Infested Waters podcast with Taylor Kent. The topic? Should Christians care or concern themselves with conspiracy theories?
I have with me Derek Gilbert from PID Radio and A View from the Bunker. So welcome, Derek.
And rather than doing an interview or this week, I have, in fact, a co-host, Taylor Kent of Snark. Oh, sorry. So we call this peering into snarkness? Is that
the, idea I had, yeah.
Well, credit peering where it's due. And Sharon says hello, and she thought that was really funny. So you have her seal of approval on that. Well, and by the way, she's feeling better. We were just kind of relaxing, watching HGTV here before the show.
Very cool, very cool. I know you guys have been going through some stuff, so that's great.
Well, it's minor stuff. I mean, it's for people not. Well, we won't belabor the point. It's minor stuff compared to what a lot of folks deal with. So, we appreciate your thoughts and prayers.
And you will always have them as long as I am here to give them to you.
Well,
so.
and back at you, Snark.
So we decided, we were talking, actually we kind of kicked around the idea of doing a live combination show before, and we never got around to doing it. And, I pinged Derek and he said, yeah, let's do it. And Derek came up with our topic based on some discussion that was going on one of the mailing lists we're both a part of. And the topic we're going to cover today is whether Christians should care about or investigate conspiracy theories or something to that effect.
Right.
Because
as you know, PID Radio, which stands for Peering Into Darkness, has developed as an outgrowth of the kind of books that the novels that Sharon and I write, which themselves developed from the our worldview, which is informed by our faith in Jesus Christ. And we've always enjoyed science fiction. We've always been drawn to conspiratorial fiction and also, conspiracy theories like the Kennedy assassination, for example, the moon landing and whether we actually ever set foot on the moon. Things like that have always kind of fascinated us. The Lincoln assassination and how throughout history, these lone nuts seemed to pop up in just the right place at the right time to take down the most powerful men in the world, presidents of the United States, the Archduke Ferdinand or what have you. And it just seemed rather implausible. But as we started investigating ideas for stories, because Sharon has been a writer for a long time before we met. That was one of the things about her that I found fascinating. And she encouraged me to try my hand at it. And so while investigating ideas for what to write, and then doing so in the context of our faith in Jesus Christ, we began to realize that, maybe the Apostle Paul was onto something when he said that we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against, the powers and principalities, and that he was referring not to human agents of evil when he said powers or wrote powers and principalities, but supernatural agents of evil. And that is what he meant in Ephesians 6:12. He meant there are literal evil intelligences that walk the planet and seek to do us harm. Well, what more do you need as an author for a starting point? So, from that we started the podcast. We've talked about this before, where PID Radio was supposed to be a marketing tool for our books. Right. And after the first show, we thought, well, we've covered why we write, and we're not really comfortable just tooting our own horns for the next, however long we choose to do the show. So we started talking about why we write, and that led to discussions with a whole host of fascinating people, from Dr. Michael Heiser to Guy Malone, Stan Deo, Peter Goodgame, David Flynn, my gosh. And then, that combined with the reading that we've done, it seems pretty clear to us that there are things going on that on the surface, on Earth, that on the surface don't make any sense. But when you consider the possibility of supernatural influence, begin to take on, they begin to come into focus.
Right.
So that's the reason for it. Now, as we discovered in this mail list, that there are some folks who think that you can devote too much time and energy to looking into these sorts of things.
Right.
And, you know, I can see the point. You can let this type of research, you know, this type of awareness of what's really going on around you turn into an obsession and let it turn you into, I mean, when we talk about, you know, being, you know, living in a bunker and, you know, my interview program now on Sundays is called A View from the Bunker, intended right. as a tongue-in-cheek reference to that sort of mindset. You know, we really don't live in a spirit of fear, which as Christians we should not have, because God does not give us a spirit of fear.
Right.
You know, greater is he that is in us than he that is in the world. But there are some who do seem to get addicted to that adrenaline rush of, oh my gosh, the president's new science advisor wrote a book in which he espoused forcibly controlling the population by, you know, sterilizing people against their will. Well,
right.
Yeah, okay. that's true, by the way. But,
right.
You know, if you read the Bible and read the words of Jesus Christ, we're supposed to expect that as Christians. And if you read prophecy, you see that things will literally go to hell on this planet before Christ's return. So we know it's not going to be a fun ride. We knew when we signed up for this that the path was narrow and that we were in for ridicule.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, sort of the price of joining the club. And I think that if you can allow this awareness of you know, the world being set against Jesus Christ and his followers to overwhelm you, and that's wrong. On the other hand, you can go too far the other direction, I think, and just ignore the whole thing and pretend that it doesn't exist, which is, sadly, where I think most professing Christians in America are today.
Right. Well, you know, now that Derek has said everything I have to say, that's the show, folks. No. I actually remember back to when you guys got started as Myth Arc Radio, and you were talking about, you know, the things that you were writing about, and I think Sharon's first book or two books were out at that point.
Right.
And I appreciated that because, you know, I don't consider myself – I probably used to be much more into conspiracy theories and stuff. In a lot of ways, they amuse me,
mm-hmm.
not to say there isn't something to them. You know, obviously, as a Christian, the enemy is out there and he is in control of the planet. Jesus made that very clear to us when the devil came to tempt him
mm-hmm.
and said, you know, I can give you everything. All you got to do is bow down before me. Well, the devil's right. He has everything for the time being.
Mm-hmm.
We all know that's going to change because we've read the end of the book and we know how it ends, and it's not good for the bad guy. So,
yeah, we're on the winning team.
Exactly.
And, you know, this is something that was kind of a sticking point for our former publisher. They never really said anything directly, and most of the contact that we had was not with the publisher directly, at least not that I had. I mean, Sharon had a lot more contact with them because her novels were the ones that really opened the door.
Right.
I think they kind of took me along for the ride. Okay, well, we'll take him too, because Sharon's stuff is really amazing. There seemed to be a little uncomfortable with some of the plot threads in the Laodicea Chronicles novels that imply, no, flat out state, that there are certain agents working within the government who are not working, that are not working for the American people, but working against the American people.
Right.
And that's tough for a... That's a tough sell, I think, for a lot of evangelical Christians. The conventions that we attended for the Christian booksellers, there was a very strong patriotic thread that runs through it. And I think you see in a lot of Christian churches today, evangelical churches especially, the American flag, you know, right up in front of the sanctuary along with the, you know, the Christian flag. And I think as a group... evangelical Christians tend to be among the most patriotic Americans.
Mm-hmm.
But as you pointed out, Snark, you can't deny that that Satan, when he took Jesus into the desert, said, all these kingdoms have been given to me, and I give them to whom I will.
Right.
And Jesus did not rebuke him for that. He rebuked mm-hmm. him for trying to tempt God or test God, but not right. for claiming ownership of all the world's kingdoms, which right. he showed to Jesus in a moment of time. So I think that, you know, I don't see any special exemption there for the United States. And again, that's hard for a lot of Christians to hear. And I say this as one who taught a class for, well, several Sunday school classes on the Christian foundation of the United States.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, you know, I'm not even going to get into that. I actually, at Convergence, sat at a panel called Ask a Mason Anything,
uh-huh.
and they said, what was their statement? Well, it's actually all founded on Masonic values. I'm like, okay, actually, that yeah. makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. Explains the layout of Washington, D.C.
Exactly. But, you know, again, I think this is one of those weird areas because, you know, one, conspiracy theories are interesting, especially to those of us who have the interest in telling stories.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you guys write, I write the Snarky Avengers stories, which you will be getting starting next year and which I have been talked into doing as an audio drama.
Sweet.
So it may not be as many as you thought you were going to get next year because there's a lot bigger production involved in that. But nonetheless, are very, very much playing the world of we don't know everything that's going on. There's tons of stuff going on behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the thing that's so compelling about it is, or at least that gets a lot of people interested, there's two things. One, when I see something being told to me that doesn't fit the facts – mm-hmm. that I have, which maybe I don't have all the information, or maybe somebody's lying to me, whatever reason, I'm suddenly thinking there's some other explanation here. And I think a lot of these big events, such as, you know, the Lincoln assassination, the Kennedy assassination, we're getting a story that doesn't fit the evidence that's been released.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which just opens the door to this speculation. And you'd think, if they really wanted to stomp on all these conspiracy theories, which they don't because basically it's fodder and it keeps people looking in different directions,
mm-hmm.
They would just come out and say, no, this is what really happened. Here's all the evidence. Either that or the evidence would be so damning about other things that they don't want to come out and talk about it, such as, you know, where were the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq? Well, we may find them under the Euphrates River, which, you know, we were told is a possibility.
John Loftus, who was the former Justice Department attorney and investigator, the one who found all the evidence in the archives that documented the link between the CIA and the Muslim Brotherhood, mm-hmm. and, you know, after World War II, you know, how we actually helped the Nazis found right. and train the Muslim Brotherhood, which is the parent organization for groups like Al-Qaeda and the Taliban and Hamas, you know, and Fatah. Mm-hmm. So there's a reason all of those Muslim organizations use the Nazi salute.
Yep.
There is no cultural analog in Islam for the Nazi salute. It is what it appears to be, a Nazi salute. Anyway, and Loftus said there was evidence that came out and that was just lost somehow after Saddam was kicked out of Iraq that, yeah, those WMDs, the nukes, really did exist. They were under the Euphrates, which is really interesting when you look at prophecy about the four angels in the Euphrates who will be right. loosed to kill a third of mankind during the tribulation period. Now, Loftus says they're not there now. Soldiers have reported that those underground bunkers are empty, which leads one to speculate, you know, where could they be?
Well, and weren't there some – I don't remember the exact scripture. I know you guys brought it up on one of your recent shows, but there were time frames related to, like, each of the angels, if I remember right. There's, like, one day, one month, one year, or something like that. I remember when when Sharon was reading that on the air, something related to that. But, you know, I apologize. I'm a bad Christian. I don't have my whole Bible memorized yet.
Well, it's in the book of Revelation. So,
so nonetheless,
and again, for Christians to bring these things up, and we're seeing some comments about this in the chat room already about this. You try to tell friends about things like this, or you try to tell family members about this, or people at your church about things like this. You know, that our government has been involved in things like helping the Nazis escape after World War II and incorporating them into elements of American society. The CIA using them as we discussed with Peter Lavenda and his work, right, which is really disturbing. You know, the I'm going to blank out on the name of his three-volume work, wow. Sinister Forces, A Grimoire of American Political Witchcraft. A title chosen very deliberately because he believes that the Nazis were a key element in the political witchcraft created after World War II, and that America somehow literally lost its soul, and he may not be too far off, after World War II because of the collaboration with the Nazis. You know, we need to use the Nazis because we've got to fight those godless communists. Yeah, that's
right.
And, you know, the United States is a government. The United States government in the second half of the 20th century, I mean, this is all just within the last 60 years or so,
right,
has dosed its citizens, unwitting participants, with things like mescaline and LSD and plutonium. You know, watched people die of syphilis so they could track the course of the disease, people who they told were being treated for the disease. These are just the things that we know about.
Right.
You know, we had the documented Operation Northwoods, where the Joint Chiefs of Staff put forward a proposal to shoot down an American passenger plane with a fighter plane painted to look like it belonged to the Air Force of Cuba, so that we could justify going in and invading Cuba and taking it back from Castro.
Yeah, that was during the Kennedy administration, if I remember right.
The tail end of the Eisenhower administration and the beginning of the Kennedy administration. So, you know, these are the things that we know about. And yet, if you bring these things up to people, you're viewed with suspicion. But again, in the context of the Bible, it makes perfect sense if you understand that we are dealing with powers and principalities here, and this is the game that they play. So,
well, and if you think about it, well, you know, first off, most of the things we're mentioning, you can do your homework and find the evidence that's out there. Freedom of Information Act documents on some of this stuff. I mean, we're not even talking about the crazy, outlandish, you know, conspiracy theories that are out there.
No, forget it. You know, David Icke and shapeshifting, shapeshifting aliens and things. You know, the Queen of England is actually a reptilian. Okay.
Well, it might explain her appearance. Oh, wait, I didn't say that. But nonetheless, I mean, we're not talking about the crazy outlandish stuff. We're talking about stuff people have done some serious research into and can back up what they're saying. You know, the Collins brothers and Peter Lavenda,
right,
and there's numbers of other people who have done major research into this stuff and can back it up. I mean, Operation Paperclip, you can find all the documents you want,
right,
that says we brought these people over and basically, you know, said it's okay as long as they're working for us.
Mm-hmm. They might be Nazis, but there are Nazis.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Because they have, quote, science, unquote, that we need. I mean, most of this is what I find disturbing, and I think that it's kind of the key to a lot of this. After World War II, I think prior to World War II and maybe through World War II, science was not nearly the king of everything that it has become.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of World War II, everything became, we've got to have better science than our enemies so we can make better weapons, we can defend our people better. And over time, science has become the king in this country and in the world for the most part, edging out religion as the new science, scientism, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We're not talking about Scientology.
And that gets back to the work of Paul and Philip Collins and their book, The right. Ascendancy of the Scientific Dictatorship, which I recommend, highly recommend. Yeah. They show that what we're told is you know, a non-spiritual, evidence-based view of looking at the world. And this is what is taught in all of our colleges and universities to our young minds today. You know, science, for its own sake, is going to save mankind from its ills. But when you look at how this worldview developed and its roots in the heavily Masonic royal society in England, and forgive me, I'm probably mangling the history here because this is not my field of expertise, but basically, to boil it down in a nutshell, it is not a science devoid of a spiritual component. It is a Luciferian quest for self-salvation at its core.
Right.
Now, I don't take my word for it. I would recommend looking up the articles by the Collins brothers on the ascendancy of the scientific dictatorship. That's a good primer for their book, which goes into much more detail and documents the evidence. But that is what's driving it today. And here's the other thing. And this gets back to why I think Christians do need to be paying attention to this, because this... You know, at its core, this doctrine of self-salvation, whether it's coming from the community of scientists, or from the New Age, which is very spiritual, is all about it, right. spiritual doesn't mean
I know, in
the correct sense. It's all about self-salvation. It's all about
right.
It's all about achieving apotheosis.
Right.
And that's what, in fact, when you come right down to it, most religions are about self-salvation. If you do these works, then you will earn your way into, whatever glorious afterlife is promised by that religion. Whereas Christianity...
Including a lot of denominations of Christianity now.
And that's what I'm leading to. I know I'm taking a long time to get there. It's my dad always used to say, you ask Derek the time, he will tell you how to build the watch. So you've got the self-salvation coming from the New Age. You've got it coming from science, which will not only keep us healthy long, forever, but will ultimately, that we're told, perhaps achieve the secret of immortality, if they can just keep our bodies from breaking down. But then you've got the heresy, the Christian heresy of dominionism, which is also very much about self-salvation, creating a literal paradise here on earth in order to pave the way for the return of Jesus Christ. And then, of course, you've got some liberal denominations that are very much into contemplative prayer, opening oneself to the spirit world through contemplative prayer, which is very Eastern but it all boils down to the same thing. It's all about self-salvation of one form or another. And that's where Christianity is different. True Christianity, in which we are told it is not by, it is by grace we are saved through faith, not by works. There is nothing that we can do to earn our way to salvation. The only thing we can do is accept the free gift of salvation through Jesus Christ. Right. To get back to the topic at hand, when you assume for a moment that Paul knew what he was talking about. I mean, he knew the group of men that lived with and learned from Jesus Christ during his time on earth in human form, and they found that his doctrine was sound. If you assume that Paul knew what he was talking about, that there are literal evil entities that walk the earth, you couple that with the research of Mike Heiser in the Divine Council Study Group that shows that the Jews believed that too, prior to Jesus revealing himself on earth, that there are small g gods who walk among us and are active on this earth, then it should be a no-brainer for Christians to believe that perhaps they are influencing some of these things that we don't quite understand going on around us, and that these conspiracies can really be true.
Right.
I mean, one of the main objections skeptics have is that there's no way so many humans involved in what in this type of a plot could keep their mouths shut, But if you allow the for the possibility, the intervention of the supernatural.
Oh, right, right.
A lot more things become possible. So,
well, and I think the key to that is that most Christians, and I might go as far as Western religious people, don't believe in the supernatural anymore. It's been taken out of the church. You know, we should all, for the most part, most Christians should have their own copy of the Thomas Jefferson Bible because the miracles have been taken out, so you don't have anything that screws up your belief. You know,
well, go ahead. No, you go ahead.
And many people have just bought into this. You know, there's no supernatural side to it. There's none of this. There really weren't miracles. They bought into the good teacher meant, you know, thinking. And it's just insane. But when you think about it, you know, I think the movie Time Bandits is an excellent example of at least how the devil worked in Time Bandits. Plus, you know, the guy, David Warner.
Mm-hmm.
Did I get that right?
Who plays David Warner.
It's awesome. But, you know, he's constantly focused on technology and kind of scientific things. And I think, you know, if you think about it, God is aspiring infinite worth to us through the sacrifice of his son. And yet the devil through science is ascribing utilitarian worth to everyone.
Yes.
And, you know, by moving us in that direction, it's almost like the ultimate thumb in the eye of God saying, yeah, I just convinced all the people that you created, they aren't worth shit.
Yeah.
So
they only have value, not because you know, we don't have value because we were created in the image of God, which, you know, I like the way Mike Heiser describes it. When you read the original Hebrew, it doesn't mean that God is about 6 feet tall with two arms, two legs. What it means is we were created to serve the same capacity on earth that God has in the universe, in all of creation. We are essentially God's agents on earth. They have dominion over. And when you take it in context, in that portion of the first chapter of Genesis, you see that what immediately follows is that we were to have dominion over the birds of the air and the beasts of the field and so forth, which kind of drives the point home. We are not created to look the way we do because God looks like this. We're created this way because we are God's agents on earth. Which, incidentally, might explain why the fallen angels are so cheesed at us. You know, that and the fact that, as Paul writes to the church at Corinth, you know, don't you know that we are going to someday judge the angels? Like, whoa, okay, that explains a lot. But anyway, what the devil is saying, Snark, you're right, is that, you know, the devil has convinced us that we have no worth just because we are God's creation.
Right.
You know, we are told that we only have worth if we have utility, if we're useful in some sense, which is how you can justify then saying, okay, Barack Obama gets the best health care on the planet. Terri Schiavo, we get to dehydrate her.
Right. Because she has no utility.
We get to dehydrate and starve her to death.
You know, I have fairly good friends who are on the other side, who are on the we've got to have this universal health care bandwagon. And the one thing that I'm always – when we discuss it, because it usually gets too heated and I just get sick of hearing the same thing over and over again, is do you really think that the government's going to look at it like everybody has value? They're not. I mean,
they can't.
It's purely – they can't. Realistically, they can't if you look at it just from a cost perspective, but there's no incentive for them to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, just the healthcare debate alone is a perfect example of – or at least where it will go.
Right.
The debate is a waste because it's about things that ultimately don't mean anything. We all know it's about controlling population and controlling people and eugenics when it comes down to it.
Right.
So.
And where it ultimately ends is with Charlton Heston screaming, "Soylent Green is people!"
Exactly. Exactly. Well, I think we'll take a quick break. So, and when we come back, for those of you who are in the chat room, we will be taking your questions.
Indeed. We'll be back in 2 minutes on A View from the Bunker.
Snark. Infested. Waters.
Snark Infested Waters is a podcast about the horror of it all. Life, faith, art, fandom, etc. Hosted by me, Taylor Kent. The show includes ranting, shouting, and or uncivil discourse on the subjects of faith, politics, art, books, movies, fandom, and more. It also includes cool music, interviews, and uncivilized reviews of the latest movies to debut on the Sci-Fi Channel's most disappointing, I mean dangerous, night of television. So if you like cool music, interviews, and rants of epic proportion, come join the fun at thesnarkyavenger.com.
Dr. Malkin, look out!
TheSnarkyAvenger.com.
One email, five lines, 4,000 dead, and it's only just beginning. A small boy in Iowa forwards a mysterious email from God to a small group of friends. Within hours, blood flows on the streets of his quiet farm community. Thousands more are dead across the country in dozens of simultaneous terror attacks. The government blames fundamentalists who want to trigger the apocalypse, but the evidence points back to someone inside the government. FBI agent Joe Eunice reluctantly teams with a conspiracy-minded internet radio host to expose the plot and discovers that the enemy is not of flesh and blood. The God Conspiracy by Derek P. Gilbert from PID Publishing. Available in trade paperback as an ebook for Acrobat Reader and Amazon.com's Kindle ebook reader, and now as a free audiobook at www.podiobooks.com. Welcome back to A View from the Bunker. We present now the second half of our interview with Taylor Kent, a.k.a. the Snarky Avenger, recorded live on July 23rd for Snark Infested Waters about Christians and conspiracy theories.
And we are back. I hope you enjoyed Wrong Side of the Revolution by Josh Woodward. You got to hear the great promo for Derek's book, The God Conspiracy, over at patiobooks.com for free, read by Derek. So go pick it up because it rocks. Spirit Blade Underground. And Summer of Podcasting Contest is still going on. My week was last week, so if you didn't get the code and head over, sorry, but there are other podcasts. Just head over to podcastmadness.com and find out who to listen to, and you might win some cool stuff. And no, they are not paying me to say that. So there you go.
Well, glad to be back. Yeah, just an interesting song. It was... But I didn't catch all of it because, in truth, I had to take Sam T. Dachshund outside for his evening walk. But Sam has secured the yard, so we are now free to do the second half of the show without being... Yes, we did name the dog STD, Sam T. Dachshund. the T, of course, is for the.
The Dachshund.
Yeah.
I like it. Yeah, I'm sure there's a white van outside both of our houses right now trying to block us, or at least listening to what we're saying. So,
yeah. Well, we joked about that, and this is one of the things about, as we talk about Christians and conspiracy theories, one of the things that is sometimes like walking a tightrope. There are those who think that you can be too involved in chasing these things down and lose your perspective on living real life. And I appreciate that. And in fact, we've taken a couple of breaks during the run of PID Radio just for that reason, to sort of step back and just remember what it's like to actually talk to people face to face and, read books and things like that, that are tactical and analog. The going the other side, because if you've listened to PID Radio, you know that Sharon and I laugh quite a bit during the shows.
Right.
And we used to make and there have been some who've suggested that perhaps we don't take these topics seriously enough. And I disagree. I just think that, again, as a Christian, knowing how the end game plays out, and recognizing that the path to that end game may be difficult and very unpleasant, we know that ultimately God's in control and he wins. So as long as we're on his team, there's nothing to really be fearful about. We can joke about things like white vans sitting outside and things like that. all doing it sort of tongue in cheek. But anyway, so I understand we're opening the chat room now on the Snark Infested Waters for questions.
Yes, we are. So the way I usually do this is I read the question, and then we can talk about it. Oh, good. There are plenty of things I won't be able to talk about. Well, let me make a couple comments first. I agree with Derek completely. We have not been given a spirit of fear. We were told very clearly that by following Christ, we're going to be persecuted. The world is going to hell literally in a handbasket. Look at the progression of just the way our country is run and the morals that are generally exhibited by people in this country over the last 50 years, and it's obvious. The selfishness factor has gone up ridiculously high. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, in all honesty, I think it still has room to climb. You know, I agree we are getting closer and closer to the end, but I also figure that God likes to, like, make us think that and then pull back a little because he has a great sense of drama. I also don't, you know, and all of you can complain now, but I don't believe in a pre-trib rapture. I am a pre-wrath person. So I figure we're going to be here for a lot of the bad stuff. So right. You might as well get used to it. But, you know, there's nothing to fear. You know, what's the worst thing that happens? Okay, our lives don't turn out that great. We lose all our money. We live on the streets. Well, guess what? We get to go to the best place ever created ever after here. So
the ultimate retirement plan.
Exactly, you know. And it's not, you know, I'm not trying to say that our faith is only about fire insurance or anything like that. But let's be honest, you know. We're going to heaven to be with the greatest being ever for the rest of eternity. We're going to have all the answers that matter. You know, I'm sure if we really want to know all the little details, I'm sure it will all be available to us. We really have nothing to complain about when it comes right down to it, especially living in America. Mm-hmm. You know, in terms of persecution, although it's going to get worse. It has to. So, yeah. So, you know, for all the stuff we talk about, I don't talk about conspiracies as much. You know, PID Radio does. And the reason I like PID Radio and always have is you do have that positive spin at the end. You know, you make it clear that, yeah, these things are going on, but we got nothing to worry about. We're in Christ.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting to watch. I think I agree with your and Sharon's take that it is our job to watch to some degree. Mm-hmm. I think there are some people who are called more to that than other people. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, we shouldn't be getting hung up in it. So
agreed. Well, looks like we got some good questions coming in the chat room here.
All right. Well, I will hit the first one here, which is from Vonster, which is a great name, by the way.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I happen to know Vonster, and you should check out his website at vonster.com.
Okay.
Seriously, cool. Yeah.
Why is the divine counsel view important for people to understand? And I'm going to let you handle that one, Derek.
This is one that really helps to make sense out of the narrative of the Old Testament and explains, I think, a lot of what happens in the world to this very day. We discovered the work of Mike Heiser through Peter Goodgame. And some of the work that Peter, one of the papers that Peter Goodgame has written, can it be a paper if it's posted online?
I would think so these days.
Well, yeah. Anyway, it's a research paper that Peter Goodgame put online at his website, redmoonrising.com. Again, highly recommended. And he cited the work of Dr. Mike Heiser in the paper. And so I looked up Mike Heiser, and Mike Heiser became the first person that we interviewed on PID Radio when we started doing interviews. The Divine Counsel essentially is the group of divine beings that make up the population, as it were, of the heavenlies. And you see in Scripture a few references to the Divine Council. I guess the best human analogy I can draw is like ancient Ireland, you know, during the Roman period and just after, where they would have a lot of regional kings, but then there was one high king, okay?
Mm-hmm.
In in reality, which we as humans must recognize, we only perceive part of, there are gods with a small g, and then there is God, Jehovah, Yahweh, the God Most High, who is the supreme. He is the creator of all. He created these small g gods. And then a number of them chose to rebel. There are several rebellions that we see, again, implied during in Scripture. Mike Heiser and his colleagues have show that the writings of the ancient Near East, from Sumer, from Babylon, from Canaan, from the other areas around there, the Ugaritic texts, will from Egypt, support the biblical account, but from slightly different perspectives. Almost like you get the Fox News version of a story, and then you get the Al Jazeera version. You know, it's and not to I didn't pick Al Jazeera because it's an Arabic or Islamic channel. I'm just pointing out that you can have two different people tell a story and have it come out completely different. So you got the fall of Lucifer and Lucifer's rebellion, and then he draws Adam and Eve away in the fall from grace, which sets up the necessity of redemption for humanity, and God then sets about his plan for a redeemer by calling Abraham out of Ur and saying, okay, your descendants, from your lineage will come the salvation of mankind. Now, God has to, because of a group of fallen angels, and this is in Genesis 6 account, come down to earth and try to destroy the bloodline of humanity through the intermarriage and mingling with the human bloodlines. And God has to wipe the earth clean and start over, preserving Noah, I believe, because as it says in Genesis 6, he is perfect in his generations.
Right.
Most churches will explain that as meaning that he was a really, really good man, righteous man. But if I think in this context, it's also fair to speculate that it means that he was genetically 100% human. He was not tainted with this genetic material from these fallen angels. God wiped the earth clean, and then just a couple of generations later, Nimrod was had basically elevated himself to high king of the earth and was building the tower at Babel. Now, this is where Peter Goodgame draws on the research of Egyptologist David Rohl, R-O-H-L, who believes that the temple, the Tower of Babel, was not at Babylon. It was at a place called Eridu, E-R-I-D-U, in Iraq. This ancient temple goes down below the flood layer, and it was a temple to a god, a Sumerian god named Enki. Enki was the lord of the Abzu, or the abyss. And in Sumerian, the words Enki mean king of the earth or lord of the earth. Now think ahead to the New Testament, where Jesus refers to Satan, Lucifer, as the prince of this world,
right,
the god of this world. And I believe that you're getting an idea now of where this goes. Enki, Lucifer, Satan, the accuser, the god of this world, you know, leads this rebellion, and Nimrod is building a temple at the Tower of Babel, which in the language, as I understand it, Bab Elu in the ancient Akkadian means God Gate. So was this just a temple to worship Enki? Well, maybe that was enough for God to personally intervene, or maybe this was something more, that under the tutelage of the fallen angel known as Enki or Lucifer or whatever, Nimrod was on the verge of building something else. So it, regardless of all that, I mean, again, that's all speculation. That's all going pretty far afield, and this is why I love this stuff, because it makes for great science fiction or fantasy writing. But, but regardless, you can't deny that this is one of the few times in the Bible where God personally comes down. God personally comes down to intervene. When is the next time that he comes down to intervene? Well, when he comes down in the form of Jesus Christ. Every other time that he intervenes in the Bible, it's through the use of his angels. But the Bible tells us then in Deuteronomy 32:8 that as Moses is singing the history of the Hebrews, he says that God numbered the nations according to the number of the sons of God. Now, most Bible translations will say according to the number of the sons of Jacob or the sons of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, Jacob wasn't alive after the Tower of Babel. When the Table of Nations in Genesis, I believe, is chapter 10, which follows the Tower of Babel incident, you know, where God scatters them across the world and confuses their speech. When you read the Table of Nations and all of those peoples that are named there, named after their, you know, progenitors, there are 70. Okay?
Right.
There are 70. Now, you look at the cosmologies of the ancient Near East, you know, Canaan and Egypt in particular, there are 70 or 72, which for theological purposes, I'm told by scholars who really know what this is all about, that those are essentially the same number. But the bottom line is that there were 70 of these fallen angels who were then placed over the earth and all of its peoples by God as his response. Look, you want to rebel, you want to worship this fallen angel, Enki or Lucifer or whatever, fine, mm-hmm. Go ahead. You guys are going to worship these small g gods. And that's how the ancient Hebrews knew their neighbor's gods, like Molech and Chemosh and Asherah and Baal. They mm-hmm. were the false gods. They were the fallen angels who had rebelled against God. And what Mike Heiser has pointed out is that this was a belief that extended until about the 4th century A.D. The early Christian mm-hmm. church, the apostles, understood this. And they make reference to it. Second Peter makes his second letter, Peter makes reference to it. The book of Jude also makes reference to the angels who kept not their first estate and sinned and were cast into the pit to be punished.
Right.
Again, that's the whole Genesis 6 account where the angels came down and mated with humans and all that. Bottom line is, when you understand that these small g gods over all of the rest of the world, you know, all the other 70 nations, you know, that were scattered about the earth after the Tower of Babel, except God reserved a 71st nation, his chosen people, to descend from Abraham. If you then understand that the rest of the Old Testament is essentially about forces under the control of those other 70 fallen angels trying to wipe out the bloodline that would produce the Redeemer, it makes a lot more sense.
Right. Go ahead.
And that's why the Divine Council is important. It actually makes some of the really bloody and disturbing episodes of the Old Testament suddenly make sense.
Right. Cleansing, in essence.
Right. Why did God tell the Hebrews to go out and wipe out every last man, woman, and child? Because they were literally in league with the enemy, and perhaps... And this is, again, research that Mike Heiser has done, and I highly recommend his website, thedivinecouncil.com. That when you map out the wars of Joshua, when the Hebrews came into Canaan to take control of the land, you map out where their battles took place and then compare it to the research that's been done of the ancient Near East, you find that those areas were the areas in which tribes known by their neighbors as giants lived. In other words, Joshua's war to take Canaan was a war against the giants, the Nephilim.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, again, it makes a lot more sense when you look at it in that standpoint. And I know I've taken a long time to do it, and I've done no credit at all to Mike Heiser, because I'm sure coming out from my mouth, it sounds like the ravings of a conspiracy loon.
Well, it sounds better than it would have coming out of my mouth, because you know a lot more than I do in the details. Now, didn't you guys just repost your Mike Heiser interviews?
Yes, in fact. The interview that we'd done, again, it was the very first interview. Now, we left the blather that we wrapped around the interview from, I think, March of 2006. So you'll get some commentary on the news of 3 years ago that may not make any sense. But if you go to PIDradio.com, part one of that interview with Mike Heiser, in which he explains, from the standpoint of a guy who really knows what he's talking about, what the Divine Council is and why it's important. And, you know, in fact, you'll actually hear the light bulb go on over my head in the second part of the interview, in which Jesus points out that in the New Testament, during Jesus' time on earth, he actually did a kind of an in-your-face move to the 70 fallen angels. You remember in the Gospel of Luke when he sends out disciples to go preach across all of Galilee?
Yeah.
You remember how many he sent out?
I'm going to guess 70, but I don't remember off the top of my head.
It wasn't just the 12 apostles. It was 70. He sent out 70 to go preach the gospel. And it was like the light bulb went out. I was like, oh, wait a minute. Does this have anything to do with it? And Mike says, yes, grasshopper. So it was, I mean, it's fascinating study, and Mike makes it accessible. And in fact, he's been working on a book, which I hope he'll finish soon, in which he basically explains these concepts to for lay people. So, anyway, well, long answer to one question there.
We have pretty much run out of time here.
No!
Unfortunately. So, Derek, if people want to check out your stuff, where can they find it?
Typically, well, we've got a bunch of sites. My website is derekpgilbert.com, D-E-R-E-K, P as in Paul, Gilbert, derekpgilbert.com. PIDradio.com is where we post all of the podcasts and interviews and so forth. And you'll find our sort of web hub at peeringintodarkness.com.
Very cool. It was great having you as a co-host. I really appreciate it.
Well, right back at you.
And I wish we could have gotten to more questions, but, well, you know, things are the way they are. So
yes, but there is the post-game party, isn't there?
There is. For those of you who don't come out live, you miss out on all the extra content. That's why we do it a little different on the live show. You're going to get all the great commentary that you've heard, but you don't get the extra stuff.
Taylor Kent broadcasts Snark Infested Waters live every Thursday evening. And then just for fun, he does Live in the Snark Cave every Saturday night, which is a riff on the horrible sci-fi Saturday night movie of the week, which deserves to be ridiculed. And Taylor has taken it upon himself to ridicule the movie because they just don't ridicule themselves. The links to his websites and his shows will be posted at PIDradio.com, of course. And your comments and questions are always welcome at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Thanks for listening. I'm Derek Gilbert, and this is A View from the Bunker.